Where do you find rest? Where do you plan to find rest? Your next holiday? Your retirement? What are your plans for rest? Everyone pursues rest. The question is your pursuit a reckless one? We started with the story of Ruth, of how a man named Elimelech and his wife Naomi took things into their own hands. They try to save and protect their own family. Their decision is a logical and reasonable one. They were in a land suffering from famine, and they left it to find food. Their decision was rational, but it never took God's will into account. They left the promised land, but the promised land is where God lived with his people. They made a rational decision, but the decision was made without any reference to the Lord. It's been a long, long journey for this family. Elimelech has died and left Naomi with her two sons. Naomi's two sons then die, and we're told Naomi, the woman, is left all alone. Naomi, being all alone, hears some good news. God has visited her homeland, Bethlehem, saving his people Israel from famine. So Naomi begins to make her way back to Bethlehem with her daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah. Along the way, another decision is made by Naomi, another decision without reference to God. She orders her daughters-in-law to return to their homes, to their people, to their gods, because in her eyes, that is where they will find rest. That's where they might find a husband who will provide them with rest. Orpah takes the unwise counsel given by Ruth and returns to her people, to her gods. But Ruth clings to Naomi. There seems to be very little prospect for Ruth in Israel, but she decides to become one of God's people. She decides that the Lord will be her God. Naomi is brought back to Bethlehem by God, and even though it is God who has brought her back to her people, she believes God's hand is against her, and she is bitter. "Don't call me Naomi, the pleasant one," she says. "Call me Mara, bitter." In chapter 2, we discover that Naomi is not as cursed as she thinks she is. She has a daughter-in-law, Ruth, who is not only committed herself to Naomi, but is also willing to serve and provide for her. Ruth sets off into the fields in search of grace, and she hopes to find someone who will grant her favor. And it just so happens that the Lord orchestrates events that lead Ruth into Boaz's field. The author of Ruth continues to highlight the fact that while all these events look like coincidences, in actual fact, it's the Lord who is putting all these strings together, directing the scenes from behind. Ruth meets Boaz, and Boaz is a wonderful man. And he shows Ruth great kindness. She's a foreigner, yet she is undeserving of his care, yet Boaz treats her as one of his own. In fact, his kindness extends beyond what is required. He lovingly invites her to share in a meal. He asks his men to help Ruth get some food. And then we discover that Ruth doesn't make her way home empty-handed. She ends up with a month's worth of food for Naomi. The family left Bethlehem in the famine. Naomi and Ruth returned to Bethlehem in the time of the barley harvest. And now they themselves have an abundance of food. The Lord has provided. Chapter 2 closed with Naomi asking Ruth who had shown her favor, and Ruth revealing that it was a worthy man named Boaz. Naomi offers a blessing, but her words are a bit vague, and it seems that she must be blessing Boaz for all that's been provided. But the words could be a blessing towards the Lord, and the ambiguity is intentional. In Naomi's perspective, it might just be that Boaz is the answer to her prayers. But from our perspective, from the author's perspective, it's the Lord's work behind the scenes. As kind and as loving as Boaz is, this story is about God's loving kindness. And today we're in chapter 3. And Naomi, believing that Boaz is the answer to their trials, comes up with a cunning plan. Let's dive in. A reckless search for rest. A reckless search for rest. The first thing to notice is that Naomi seeks rest for Ruth. Chapter 3, verse 1. Naomi says to Ruth, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it might be well with you?" Remember chapter 1? Naomi believed that both Ruth and Orpha would only find rest if they got married. And so Naomi, seeking to give them rest, told them to return to their people, to their gods, because that's where they would find a husband. That was her cunning plan back then, and it led to Orpha abandoning her. Now Naomi has a second cunning plan for rest, and we should be skeptical. Her cunning plan is to find Ruth a husband, but it's another reckless plan. She says to Ruth, "Hey, is Boaz not our relative? Look, he's winnowing the barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash, anoint yourself, and put on a cloak. Go down to the threshing floor. Don't make yourself known. Wait for Boaz to eat and drink. When he has finished eating and drinking, watch where he lies. When he is asleep, go over to him, uncover his feet, and then you lie down. When he wakes up and sees you, listen to what he says and do what he tells you." That's Naomi's plan for Ruth. It's a reckless plan. She is sending her daughter out in the middle of the night. Her daughter is going to be dressed as best as she can. She's going to be smelling of perfume and looking for a man. Does that not already sound a bit troubling? Well, it's a little more troubling when you consider the context. Boaz is at the threshing floor. Later on, Boaz says the woman shouldn't be seen at the threshing floor, right? Well, the threshing floor is a place where grain and barley have been gathered together for the harvest, from the harvest, and is now being sifted out and sorted out. It's a lot of hard work with late nights involved and a lot of men. The troubling thing is knowing that threshing floors were renowned for sexual immorality, where people worked a bit late, had a bit too much to drink, and got a bit too friendly. So Naomi's plan for Ruth, in that context, is that she gets dressed as attractively as she can, she's to then wait for a man who's had a little bit too much to drink, and then get into bed with him. Does anyone here have any daughters? Sound like good advice? As an aside, just because something is in the Bible does not mean it's a good idea. We need to be careful readers of the text, thoughtful readers of the text. Naomi is seeking to give her daughter a husband. That is a good thing. But she's taking things into her own hands, doing things her own way. This is not a good plan. This is a dreadful plan. Naomi wants a good thing, but she's going about it the wrong way. And we discover why in our second point on the outline. Dirty laundry, laying it all on the line. Dirty laundry, laying it all on the line. We've heard Naomi's plan for Ruth. And now on one level, that's all it is. It's a plan for Ruth. If we're reading this story in the context of the biblical story so far, alarm bells are ringing in our ears. You see, there are stories in the past, stories from Israel's history, dirty laundry from the past, that makes us believe that this story is going to go very, very wrong. Firstly, Lot's daughters. In reading Naomi's plan, we're reminded about a plan conceived of by Lot's daughters. Lot and his two daughters were saved from Sodom and Gomorrah, saved and brought out of a land that was cursed by God, just like Ruth and Naomi. Lot's daughters had no husbands. In fact, the men they had arranged to marry died in the land they had just come from, just like Ruth and Naomi. And just like Ruth and Naomi, Lot's daughters have no children. Lot's daughters are all alone with their father, and they conceive of a plan to protect the family by having children. They give their father some alcohol. They wait for him to get drunk and fall asleep. Then they lie down with him. The first night, the oldest daughter follows through with her plan. The second night, the younger. Both of them wait for their father to get drunk, fall asleep, and then they sleep with him. The oldest daughter conceives, and she has a son that she names Moab. Remember, Ruth is a Moabite. Her great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother was Lot's daughter. She waited for a man to get drunk so that she could lie down with him. This was not a good thing. Well, Ruth, a descendant of Moab, is to watch as Boaz has something to eat and drink, wait for him to fall asleep, and then lie down with him. Like mother, like daughter, you could say. Do you see the tension here? Alarm bells are ringing. Ruth is putting herself in a very vulnerable situation, one linking her to her terrible past. Second story, Tamar. Tamar is a widow, Genesis 38. She's lost her husband. God judged him, he died. Her family redeemer was a man named Judah. He was responsible with providing her for a new husband. He did so. His name was Onan. Onan dishonored her and the family. He was wicked, God judged him, he died. The redeemer, Judah, then promised Tamar another husband to look after her and protect her. But when the time came, he did not fulfill his promise. Tamar then decides to take things into her own hands. She takes off her dress, which marks her out as a mourning widow, puts on a new dress, hides her face, and pretends to be a prostitute. She sleeps with the family redeemer so that she can become pregnant. Well, in Ruth, Naomi's plan is that she has a bath, takes off her widow's garments so that she's no longer mourning. She anoints herself and she approaches her redeemer. Ruth could almost be said to approaching Boaz, dressed as a prostitute. Are you getting worried yet? Are you sensing the tension? Is there a question in the back of your mind asking, is this a good or a bad thing? Let me add, if I can, to the tension of this historical drama in this scene. The writer not only reminds us of the failures of the past, but he also uses language in the text to raise more and more concern. Ruth is to uncover Boaz's feet and lie down. The word uncover in the Bible is used as a reference to uncovering someone's nakedness. So in Ezekiel 23, a prostitute uncovers her nakedness and flaunts herself. The word for feet is used in other places as a possible euphemism for genitalia. And the term to lie down is also a term used in Scripture to refer to sexual relations. Lot's daughters lie down with their father. Now the author is not using those words here in that sense. Ruth will actually uncover Boaz's actual feet or legs and will lie down close to him rather than sleep with him. But these words are being used in this text as provocative, to be provocative. So let me tell you the plan once again, now that you know the context. Ruth is to be dressed and beautified, smelling like roses. She's to wait for Boaz to eat and drink and get merry. She's to watch where he chooses to sleep. When he's asleep, she's to uncover his feet and lie down with him. Are you understanding the recklessness of this plan? You understand that there's a lot that could go wrong in this passage. You read the text and questions are being raised. What is Ruth actually trying to do? Is she being like Lot's daughters? Is she being like Tamar? At the end of this passage, will we still say that Ruth is an honorable woman? What about Boaz? Is he just like Lot? Or will he be like Judah? At the end of this passage, will he still be a worthy man? I can tell you dozens and dozens of stories, well, not dozens and dozens, but maybe dozens of stories of this scene played out by people I know, and it's not been happy endings. There are many women who are willing to take such a risk, and many men who would willingly take advantage of such an opportunity. So what happens in this story? Ruth goes to the threshing floor. Boaz eats and drinks. He doesn't get drunk like Lot. He falls asleep. Ruth sees where he falls asleep. She uncovers his legs and lies down next to him. Then verse 8, it's midnight. Boaz is startled. It's like he shivers from the cold. His legs have been uncovered and he's cold. He's woken up. He turns over and he sees a woman lying down next to him. Verse 9, he says, "Who are you?" She says, "I'm Ruth, your servant." At this point, she fails to carry out Naomi's plan perfectly. Naomi said, "When he wakes up, listen to what he says, what he says you ought to do." Ruth doesn't do that. Look at what she says. It is shocking. She lays everything on the line, verse 9. "I am your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." This is remarkable. She is asking Boaz to spread his wings over her. So take a look back to chapter 2, verse 12. Boaz has said that the reason he's been so kind to her is that she has been faithful to Naomi. But then he says, chapter 2, verse 12, "May the full reward be given you by the Lord, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Ruth is asking Boaz to answer that prayer for her. What she's asking Boaz to do is marry her. She is laying everything on the line here. You see, to spread your wings could also mean to cover with a garment. And that covering a woman with a garment was a symbolism of marriage. So Ruth sees the way in which God will protect her, the way in which God will answer Boaz's prayer. The way that prayer will be answered, Boaz's prayer will be answered, is by Boaz himself taking Ruth to be his wife. Why should Boaz be the one to marry Ruth? Well, Ruth says, verse 9, because he is a redeemer. A redeemer, remember, we spoke about it a few weeks ago, was someone who was related to the family and had responsibility to care for those in the family, widows included. Boaz blesses Ruth for her kindness. She could have chosen many others, but she has chosen not for love or money. She has chosen to ask Boaz because he is a family redeemer. Naomi has sought to find Ruth a husband. That was Naomi's kindness, if you like. But Ruth has sought a husband that would redeem Naomi. They both have each other in mind. And look how Boaz goes on to describe Ruth in verse 11. "All the townsmen know that she is a worthy woman." The author clears up all of our concerns of deception and promiscuousness. Ruth is a worthy woman. Here we have a worthy man, chapter 2, verse 1, and a worthy woman discussing marriage. But there's one slight hiccup. There's another relation who is closer relative to Naomi, verse 12. So Boaz promises he will go into the town the next day, and if the other man will redeem Ruth and Naomi, then let it be. But if not, then he promises he will do it. He will redeem them. There is another redeemer who is first in line to redeem Ruth and Naomi. And Boaz is concerned to make sure that all things are done the right way. He's not going to take advantage of a situation just because it presents itself to him. No, he's going to trust the Lord and ensure that he follows the law. Opportunities are not always blessings to be grasped. Sometimes they are temptations to be avoided. Well, the next day they get up early. They get up before anyone would recognize them so that no one will think anything dodgy has happened. Boaz is concerned to protect both himself and Ruth's reputation. Ruth's about to leave, and Boaz calls her over, asks for her garment, and he fills it with 6 measures of barley. He then goes into the city to make arrangements, and Ruth returns home to Naomi. Ruth returns home to Naomi, and an interesting question from Naomi, "Who are you?" Ruth's answer is only concerned with what Boaz has done for her. Boaz has provided barley. Because, look down to verse 17, because Ruth was not to go back to Naomi empty-handed. Isn't this interesting? This little bit is included. Naomi and Ruth arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the harvest. And Naomi said, the Lord has brought her back. She left full, she's returned empty, and she's bitter. Since then, she has been provided for all along the way. She returns to Bethlehem at the beginning of the harvest in chapter 1. Chapter 2, Boaz provides her with an ephah of barley. Now in chapter 3, again, she's provided for. The Lord provides for this widow who's claiming to be empty-handed. He provides endlessly. What is he going to provide next week? You'll have to come back and see. Naomi ends off the chapter, off chapter 3, telling Ruth to wait for Boaz. He will not rest until the matter is sorted. So what does this passage mean for us? What should we be taking away from it? Final point, resting in the work of the Redeemer. The most interesting thing to notice in this passage, in this story, is the fact that the writer is raising alarm bells. Naomi's plan is reckless. It ties the story of Ruth to her past. Ruth ends up in an extremely vulnerable position, laying everything on the line. This story could have ended very badly. In fact, we're meant to be thinking, this is not a great situation. But the surprise of the story comes when we are confronted by what we do not expect to find. A worthy man and a worthy woman. A man of character and a woman of character. A man who will not take advantage of a situation, but will rather honor the law. He will be faithful to God. This story could have gone very wrong, and yet it doesn't, because Ruth seeks out the right man, and yet the right man is a worthy man with a godly character. Let's talk about your hopes, dreams, and desires. My hopes, dreams, and desires. What do we expect from God? Naomi had a good desire for Ruth. Her desire was that Ruth would find a husband. So her plan was put into place to achieve her goal. The story only works out well because the man entrusted in the story was an honorable one. What are your hopes, dreams, and desires? What do you think about? Where do you think you'll find rest? How are you planning to achieve your rest? What do you believe you need to find security and rest? This story has worked on two different levels, don't you think? On the one hand, we're made to believe that this is disastrous. A woman dressed as a prostitute, stalking a man who has just had a little to drink, seeking to get in bed with him. But on the other hand, there's an innocence which is revealed. In the worthiness of the characters, Ruth is no prostitute. She's a worthy woman who chooses a worthy man to redeem her. She has no aim to deceive. She's quite sincere about wanting him to be her husband. Boaz is no drunk fool who is all out for himself, all out to gain whatever he can. He's not a red-blooded male acting in a drunken stupor. No, he is a worthy man who will do all he can to redeem Ruth and Naomi and provide for them in a way that is wholesome and God-honoring. This story works on two levels, but the tension resolves itself when we discover the characters of the story are motivated by pure desires for good. So here's the question for us. Which perspective best describes your pursuit of the Lord? Why do you search out for the Lord? What motivates you? Is it your own plans and desires? Or is it the fact that you want relationship with him? Do you come to the Lord trying to make yourself attractive? Do you come to him showing off your outer beauty, your charming good works? The fact that you come to church and read your Bibles? Do you give away your money in the hope that he will bless you in this life with riches, success, good health, comfort? Why do you pray? Is it simply that the Lord will do what you wish? If so, you could say you've dressed yourself up like a prostitute. You come to the Lord for his provision, but your heart is tied to things of the world. You're not committed to him in sickness and health, in poverty or in riches. In fact, if the Lord doesn't provide what you want, you'll leave in the morning in search for rest somewhere else. Why do you pursue the Lord? Pursuing the Lord for your own plans, your own desires, is a reckless pursuit. It's a pursuit of a prostitute. The crowds following Jesus, you know, the crowds wanted to make Jesus king. Read John's gospel and you will know that Jesus is the true king of Israel. He is the king, and the people wanted him to be their king. But that's just the trouble. They wanted him to be their kind of a king who would do what they expected and how they wanted things to be done. They wanted a king who would re-establish the nation of Israel. They wanted a king who would drive the Romans out and gain victory for them. But Jesus was not their king. He was God's chosen king. His role as king was to die for his people, for their sins, and gain victory over death. This is the way that Jesus was going to establish a relationship with the church, through his death and resurrection. This is the way he would redeem his bride, the church, and gain victory, through his death and resurrection. Jesus' life and death fulfilled the law. He was a man of worthy character, and he followed through with God the Father's plans in the way that God the Father desired. There were no shortcuts. Redemption came through his death. His death dealt with our sin. Through his death, we are offered forgiveness. That is how we are redeemed. That is how we are invited into relationship with him, a covenantal relationship, one that is in sickness and in health, in poverty and in riches. Israel's approach to Jesus was as a prostitute, wanting a quick and easy fix to their political problems, wanting him to provide for them as they saw fit, but not wanting the relationship he offered. Jesus did not come for a quick fix. He came to provide a solution to sin and death. Is that why you come to Jesus? Do you come to him knowing that he is your Redeemer? He is willing to have a relationship with you, where you are forgiven, where your past is wiped clean, and where your future is secured. That is why Jesus came. Sure, to the outside world, Christians may look like we come to Jesus for what the things we want. Come to the Lord it may look like we simply come to the Lord in the middle of the night when things are tough. It may look like we simply call on God for our own desires to be met. Sure, that's what it might look like to the outside world from their perspective. But if they were to see our Lord, if they were to see our sincere desire for real relationship with God, they would discover the true character of Jesus Christ and his church, and realize that he is a worthy king, and that we are a worthy people seeking our king. He is a worthy king who will redeem and provide not only for our whims and wishes, but for our sins and our eternal future. He is a worthy king who will have us redeemed and in a committed relationship with him as our head. Would you come to Jesus seeking his will? Would you come to Jesus knowing he loves you? He wants a relationship with you. Would you come to Jesus knowing he desires to redeem you, to forgive you of your burdensome sin? Jesus says, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." This story began with a reckless plan for rest, a plan given to Ruth by Naomi. But this chapter ends with wise counsel. Wait. Rest in the work of a Redeemer. Know that as someone trusting the Lord, you are free from the burden of seeking recklessly for rest somewhere else. You are free from the burden of seeking rest recklessly. Trust in Jesus. Wait on him. He is the Redeemer who is at work in this world, and you can rest knowing full well that Jesus is a worthy man and he will complete the task. Let me pray.